On today's episode, we welcome Dr. Elva Ma. Elva is a veterinarian and the medical director at the Wellesley Animal Hospital in downtown Toronto. She joined the clinic in 2011 and has a special passion for dentistry and soft tissue surgery. We will discuss what to look for when choosing dog food, the grain-free diet trend, raw food diets, and some amazing resources to help you on your dog's food journey. Today's topic, I am beyond excited because it's so confusing. And I have to tell you, the very first time I walked into the pet store, I walked down the aisles, and not one, not two, so many aisles of pet food. And I was completely overwhelmed. And I ended up walking out of the store with nothing that day, you know, and it's just overwhelming. It's, you know, you hear about raw, you hear about grain-free diets, you hear about, you know, the big name pet products and all these things. And it's, you know, who do you listen to? You go onto Google and you try to inform yourself, and there's so many things out there. And I think, how do you know what sources are the right sources?
Yeah, no, it's a really good question. And even myself, having the educational background in veterinary medicine, going online and searching up some of these diets that I hear about from pet owners, it's a bit of a minefield having to go wade through the claims and all the kind of marketing tools that they have at their disposal, and kind of weeding through that and getting down to the nitty-gritty of, you know, the actual clinical trials and whether they're nutritionally balanced and all that stuff. It's hard to wade through it. But there's definitely some resources out there that can help pet owners decide, what pet food brand actually does, is a responsible company, whether they, employ veterinary nutritionists or, even just animal nutrition PhDs, whether they go through clinical trials and things like that. So, I'm happy to speak about that today and also provide some resources online that may help people as well, kind of go through the checklist of what a good pet food company would be.
So you talk about, it's so interesting because you see all these micro brands popping up, trendy, hip, cool, and you wonder, where are they coming from? And so, your comment on making sure who's a part of that team, share a little bit more, what that looks like and what you mean by that.
Yeah. So, one of the things I would look for in a new type of pet food manufacturer is whether they employ at least one full-time qualified nutritionist. So whether that is a veterinarian that is certified by the American College of Veterinary Nutrition, or whether it's someone with a PhD in animal nutrition, those would all be very adequate. And we want to make sure that they are a full-time employee because, companies do need that continued expertise of a nutritionist to just ensure that their quality control is sound throughout the whole production of the product.
There's a lot of thought, people shy away from the big brands because they see it as like big, supported by big names and big marketing budgets. But I know in our chat leading up to this, you mentioned the benefit potentially of some of these brands.
Yeah. So, being a big name, a lot of history behind the brand, I'm thinking about your, Purina or Hill's and Royal Canin, and those ones have been around for quite a long time. And they've been around for long enough, and they're large enough companies that they've been able to properly set up fairly large scale facilities where they're allowed to conduct full clinical trials on their foods on particular pets from pretty much for the whole life stage that the diet is designed for. And so that's really helpful in terms of ensuring nutritional adequacy for the entire life stage that the diet claims to be for, whether it's for growth and lactation, whether it's for just the adult stage or older pets.
Think it's really important to kind of debunk those and understand the benefit of both. So you're
Yeah.
mentioning some sources kind of where we could look online. I mean, I think if anything, your veterinarian should be your number one source, and they're a resource for you and they're there to help you. I hope you would agree with that.
Yeah,
And
absolutely.
I think people sometimes forget that that's what your vet is there. They're there to champion for your pet. But if you had to suggest, some online resources that as a new pet owner we might be able to look to, would you mind sharing some with us?
Yeah, the one that I would most commonly share is the World Small Animal Veterinary Association, so WSAVA.org. They've got a whole section about veterinary nutrition, and they've got some nice infographics about how to read pet food labels and interpret them, and just a guide on kind of what to look for when you're surfing the internet, looking for information on a diet that you're interested in. There's another website that I recently came across where you can actually compare different brands, and they show you whether they employ full-time nutritionists, whether they're fully owned by the company, what kind of testing they do for their diets to ensure nutritional adequacy. Let me find that link, and because I thought that one was a pretty useful one as well.
There's so many brands, they all tout different benefits. And, it's like, I think obviously, your idea of making sure that they have a team behind them, so there's science to back it. You have mentioned, trials and the importance of that and making sure that it's proven itself.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll see if I can track it down. I'm having a trouble multitasking right now, but I'll see if I can find it, and I'll let you know in a few minutes.
Yeah, no worries. We can share that after too. And so when we
Yeah.
look at a food, I think these online resources are good, but what are some of the basics? Like,
Most of our diets that we look at these days, the commercial diets, if we're looking at cats, for example, we have to make sure that all the diets are they contain taurine, because before many years ago, before we had started supplementing with taurine, we would notice cats getting ill from the lack of it. And actually, we're starting to see in some of these boutique brands, the ones especially that are considered grain-free, if there's some sort of link between those diets and lack of absorption of taurine, which can predispose dogs, certain breeds of dogs, to heart disease. So that's something, some information and some studies that have been coming out within the last few years. So it's very new, but that link has been shown that these diets, they may look quite they look great on paper, but because they haven't gone through many years of testing, we're just starting to see some of the repercussions and some of these outcomes of potentially having not a fully balanced, fully complete nutritional profile. So that's just one example that I can think of. And then when you are thinking, when you are going down the list of ingredients in a on the pet food bag, try not to focus as much on the ingredients themselves. What's more important is the nutrients behind the ingredients. So the actual kind of amino acids and proteins and vitamins and minerals that those ingredients provide. Okay. So, for example, instead of just looking at a diet and saying, oh, it's got corn, that's something that I'm against. I've heard a lot of bad things about corn. Think about what the corn actually provides. So it's actually a quite good source of energy and carbohydrates for pets. But if it is processed properly, right? If we're just giving him the corn, with the whole husk and everything, it's going to be like when we eat a cob of corn. That's just going to go straight through, and we won't be really absorbing many of the nutrients. But when it's processed properly, it can be very nutritious for the pet and provide a good source of energy.
So insightful, right? It's, you see all the different, beef, chicken, liver, all these things. So understanding that looking for the nutrients is absolutely so helpful. And your comment on the grain-free diets, it's certainly one that's, if I will, trendy right now. And yeah, I just was chatting with a friend of mine who's a dog owner and had a situation at the vet. And that's exactly what was the cause of the issues, was a grain-free diet. And, as a pet owner and as a dog owner, you think, I'm making the best decision. This is a good decision. And you just never know, right? So it's understanding and seeing the trials of those. And I know one right now that's really interesting. I see so much about this online. It quietly terrifies me is raw diets. I understand the benefits. There's, higher energy levels, what I hear, shiny coats. My pet is, having this great experience. And then, there's also, for me as a pet owner, it does scare me. I think about, the risks associated with it. I think about bacteria, not only for my dog, but also for myself. I think about, the danger of, oh my goodness, what if they choke on a bone, And so understanding raw diets, I'd love for you to offer some input in that. And I know that it's, if I think it can be controversial because there's some people that tout it as something that has truly helped their dogs.
And thank you for asking that question. And you're right, it is a very it's a very popular option these days with dog owners especially. And there's a lot of these new boutique brands that are touting the benefits of raw diets. And to be honest, there's so many coming out, and I might get a new name each month that I have to look up because I they're so brand new on the market. And that's I think one of the problems that we had alluded to earlier, where these newer brands, we don't have as much background information on their quality control processes, and that's sort of in addition to the risks that we have of feeding raw meat in general. So, the risk of things like Salmonella and Campylobacter and Clostridium and all those really scary types of bacterial pathogens, that risk doesn't go away even if you are purchasing freeze-dry or frozen meat from the pet store. The freezing the meat doesn't kill pathogens. The only thing that kills bacterial pathogens and parasitic pathogens is a high heat. So that's something that I would take a second look at some of these claims that the pet food companies are making regarding their raw meat safety, and do some research on non-affiliated websites. Go to that WSAVA site that I was talking about. That'll give you some information on how to kind of weed through that those details that they're claiming. But yeah, like it's, I would say the times that I would actually recommend a raw diet for a pet are so few and far between. And by and large, we can achieve the same outcome with some sort of cooked option, whether it is a commercial option, either kibble or wet food, or even a homemade diet option, as long as the meat is cooked properly.
What is it about raw diet that kind of made it the the trendy diet these days?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I think that a lot of there's been a lot of push on the internet over the past, I would say, like 20 years. There was a term that was coined by a book called the BARF diet. I think it was called like, yeah, it was the BARF diet. And BARF stands for biologically appropriate raw food, or we could also call it bones and raw food. And so I guess that book that was published was kind of the starting point for a pretty popular option that people have been drawn to. I think, you know, partly because there's a misconception that commercial dog food is contributing to serious problems in pets. While, you know, I think it's a lot of anecdotal things that people have kind of latched onto, and not any scientific basis for these claims. And with regards to the benefits of raw diets, you know, perhaps people are seeing a benefit. Perhaps we could see the same benefit with the proper cooked diet as well, whether, I guess, again, if whether it's commercial or homemade. So it's not to say, you know, that the benefits were seen because of the raw diet alone, but, you know, what else could it be? There's so many nutritional ingredients that go into a diet that it's hard to separate out what the cause and effect would be.
You know, another reason might be, I've heard this from dog owners before, and, you know, that fear of your dog eating the same thing every single day, right? It's, oh my goodness, if I had to eat, you know, grilled cheese sandwiches every single day for my entire life. Is that a thing? Like, should you be, you know, adding some variety to your pet's schedule?
Right. Well, I guess I would say I wouldn't be too bothered with eating grilled cheese sandwiches every day myself. but I would say that it's fine to switch it up every once in a while. You know, some dogs do enjoy just eating the same diet day in and day out. I know that my previous dog couldn't have cared less what he had, as long as he had, you know, a nice bowl of kibble put in front of him. He was quite happy. But at the same time, you know, if people are interested in switching it up every once in a while, that's fine to do, as long as we're doing it a few ones that we know the dog is good with. And by that, I mean ones that we know don't cause any upset tummy, like vomiting or diarrhea in the pup, and that we know that they enjoy. So, you know, what I might suggest is trying to establish those three or four rotations of diet of brands that you might try. Do a gradual transition anytime that you're introducing a new option. So we usually recommend weaning in a new diet over about a week to 2 weeks as they get used to it. You know, then we can start adding that into the rotation of diets options for them. So definitely not against that. You know, rotating up commercial brands, you know, that's something that I think people do pretty regularly as well. As far as, you know, the option of adding on some more exotic options like the raw meat diets, or adding on some of these more boutique diets, again, it goes back down to doing your research and making sure that, you know, you've got that base information that you need to make an informed decision on whether this diet is a safe one and whether it's a healthy one for your pet. And again, that goes back to making sure that they've done the proper nutrition testing. So one thing that we also look for is an AFCO statement on the diet. And so an AFCO statement, it's AAFCO. It either would state that it has been It provides the levels of nutrition as advised from the AFCO standards, or even better, they go through clinical trials on actual animals to make sure that it is safe for the life stage that it is designed for. And, you know, as long as they've got the AFCO statement, we can be assured that it is nutritionally adequate. You know, that in combined with just doing your research from the WSAVA guidelines.
I think as a dog owner, we have a responsibility to have that knowledge, but you know, the knowledge that you as a veterinarian have to offer is more than we can ever find online. So I believe that you're the resource that we definitely can look to help us out. And when it comes to diet, you know, the thought is, you know, you have some concerns about obesity and exercise, which is a whole other episode for sure. But when you're looking at feeding them, are there any guidelines that you would recommend? I know there's a ton of different breeds of dogs, so that's a very blanket statement. But are there some general guidelines as to how to feed your pets on a daily basis?
Yeah, so most diets will have a feeding guideline on the back of their package, and that's a pretty generalized guideline. If you wanted to, I would recommend getting a bit more of a tailored feeding guideline from your veterinarian. It's pretty easy for them to do a calculation on how much calories your pet should be eating based on their body condition, their life stage, their activity level. So you're right, every pet is different, and it'll your vet can tailor a more specific feeding guideline based on your pet's individual needs.
And then when you talk about all these different foods, I mean, there's so much choice. That's a given. What are some things that we should be watching for? You know, if I have some allergies myself, but what are some things that we should be watching for in our dog? Are there any signs that, you know, our dog may not be reacting well to the food beyond the obvious that we should watch for?
Right. I guess one of the main things is if they're not maintaining weight, or if they're not gaining weight, if that's the goal, if they're young. So we want to make sure that they're maintaining proper muscle mass and body condition. So that's one of the things you want to make sure of. You want to check their stools to make sure that they're looking healthy. So they're not having diarrhea or the opposite, constipation as a result of the diet. So those are things to watch for. And, you know, some of the other things that people like to look for is just that shiny coat. You know, the diet does make a difference in that regard too. So those are all things I can think of right off the bat that you might want to watch for when you're starting off a new diet. And anytime, you know, as I said earlier, if you're looking to transition to a new diet, we always want to do it gradually over a week or two to make sure that the pups are handling the new diet well, and they're easing into the new version of their food.
And you know, we talk about food, and like I told you, it was so overwhelming walking up and down those aisles. But then I got to the treat aisle. Is there any advice? That's such a blanket statement, and I recognize that. In a treat that we should be, you know, any treats that you would strongly recommend?
Well, for treats in general, you know, they're not designed for to maintain nutritional health in a pet. So usually on a treat, it'll have some sort of statement that says this is only designed for supplemental feeding. And so I'm a bit less concerned about the nutritional completeness of a treat. Having said that, my preferred type of treat is something that has a fairly minimal ingredients. So, for example, something like a freeze-dried liver treat. Those are pretty basic. Literally, it's just freeze-dried beef liver or chicken liver. And I like them a lot because you can break them up into small enough pieces that your dog will think they're getting like 100 treats, whereas they're just getting one large chunk that's split up into multiple small pieces. And so it's really useful for training purposes and kind of that bonding, the human animal bond when you're offering these types of treats. The type of treats that I would try to avoid, if possible, would be things like hard bones. And other types of like hard chewing implements, so like antlers, bully sticks, those kinds of things, because we've seen a lot of cases where they can cause issues with fractured teeth, or if they're ingested, they can break off and cause damage to through the esophagus or the stomach or the intestines. Or even worse, get lodged somewhere in the GI tract, which ends up resulting in a surgery to remove it. So for sure, I'd avoid things like that. And, you know, small treats are great. And in general, we recommend treats to be no more than 10% of the daily caloric intake of the pet in general.
I think that that's a good guideline for sure and something to consider. Everything that you've shared today is so beneficial to a dog owner, whether they're just getting their pup or whether they're in. I think you presented some great ideas, and I really appreciate you taking the time to come in today and to chat with us and to share your insight and help us debunk some of these myths, because there is, like we said, there's so much out there. And, you know, even providing the website for us to go look at and get some ideas, I think is great. And so thank you so much for your time.
Oh, you're welcome. Yeah, thank you for having me on. It's really, really great to get the chance to chat about nutrition and kind of share the knowledge that I've had, that I've accumulated over the years, but also help other pet owners to make an informed decision about what they're feeding their pet. I did end up finding that comparison website. So if you wanted to, if pet owners wanted to search petnutritionalliance.org, and they have a section called Dare to Ask, We Did. And that has the whole comparison tool where you can search up the brand that you're interested in, and it'll pop up with all the important information that you need to make an informed decision.
That's a great link. I'm sure it will get some traffic after this podcast. So thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of New Dog, Now What? If you know someone with a new dog in their life, please be sure to share this episode with them and follow along on Instagram at newdoglifeca. Thanks for joining.